Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. No mai, haere mai, after a big All Blacks victory, a clean sweep in the Bledisloe over in Perth after last time over there. I think there was a little bit of relief that they got through that one, and they did it in fine style, besides going down by one man at one point. We'll talk about Geordie Barrett very, very soon, but let's get into the test match now. We got Bryn Hall down in Christchurch, James Parsons in Auckland, and Jipper. You've got your chance. You've been talking to Kira Ioane now for 2 years. The floor is yours.
Oh, mate, he was exceptional yesterday. I think like everyone will focus in on what Akira did statistically. You know, big work rate, defence and attack, but it's what he does off the ball. What you don't always see has been his biggest growth at Test match level. You know, he's been doing it for a number of years at the Blues now, and getting in the right spaces out in that wide channel to allow him time and space doesn't just happen. And he's getting off the ground and doing repeated efforts. And that's the thing I like the most is that off the ball work to put himself in a position to be able to exploit the defence. And he did just that. And then when he got the ball, some of those fends, that fend on Ikitau was exceptional. And then his selfless nature as well. Always looking to give the ball for that try to make sure it's secured rather than going himself when he probably could have easily have gone himself as well. So, look, all in all, is a massive all-round performance, great at set piece, great off the ball, great defensively and fantastic with ball in hand.
That jersey's his now, Bryn, you reckon, for the rest of the championship if he wants it?
Oh, look, I think the growth that, you know, he had from last year, we talked around probably last year being able to kind of stamp his mark in their number six jersey, and then went through the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman and Aotearoa and continued to improve in that with a lot of competition in that Blues team. And then, you know, that performance on the weekend was probably the best that I've seen at Akira at that level. And, you know, he seems to be consistently now doing this time and time again. And, you know, that just comes with the nature of him being able to play every single week and being able to iron out a few things, but, you know, more so taking it to that level of potential that he's always had. And so the two things that I really enjoyed was, I think first and foremost, his second efforts and being able to work on and off the ball, both on an attack and defensively. But, you know, the ability with him, we know how much of a great ball runner he is, but the two try assists that he had, because he has so much damage and so much people have so much respect for him, they always gravitate towards him defensively. And, you know, the draw and pass where he could have gone by himself, he gives it to Will on the right-hand side. And then another one to Anton Leonard Brown in the second half. It's just kind of seen how much growth he has had in this game. And it comes back to also the All Blacks as well, around getting him in those opportunities with that space and time. Like I look at Will Jordan when he gave that quick pass to him, and then Akira obviously uses footwork and beats Korobetti Ikitau when he was on the edge. So, but look, I think Akira's in a rich reign of form, and with a guy like that, you know, they're going to play Argentina, do they arrest him or do they just keep playing him? Because I think with a guy like that, with who's had so much potential and has actually just played consistently, I think the more and more time he's going to get, the more and more we're going to see performance like that we did on the weekend.
Jipper, you know him well. You've been in the team with him for a long time. Backing a guy like that with his personality type and saying to him, here you go, it's yours. Does that make a big difference for a guy like Akira Ioane?
Oh, look, absolutely. I think any player loves to be backed. But I think one thing he's sort of proving to himself that he's world class at international level, and he's done it back-to-back now as well, which, you know, we sort of spoke about last week, the importance of backing up a pretty impressive performance at Eden Park, and now he's gone again. I think that is, you know, saying a lot. And now for him to have, I suppose, that physical nature change in styles coming up, is another test and another opportunity for him to stamp his mark in the international arena against a different opposition and a different way of playing, and potentially not probably going to see the opportunities and space that he's seen in past weeks, and finding a way to be able to show his skill set against rush defences and something a little bit different.
Speaking of rush, how fast does his brother look? Rico,
yeah,
when he sees a hole.
Well, we talked about, I think last thing, Ian Foster brought it up last year around, he had just a wee little niggle with soft tissue injuries around his hamstring last year, and so a little bit might have taken away his speed a little bit. But I think if you look at this year, a fully fit Rico, he looks fit, he looks fast, he looks like he's been able to play a lot, and could arguably be at centre, but fortunately, he's got a great ability to be able to play on the wing as well. And, before he was selected in the wing this season, a couple of years ago, he was arguably the best in the world. So, the things that I love, we know with the ball on hand, like, he's just got that extra speed, the extra burst, and every time he seems to touch the ball, it just feels like he's going to break open the game. But the thing as well, you're talking around Akita and his ability off the ball and being able to work it defensively. Rico did an awesome got Tom Banks. Tom Banks made a massive line break, and Tom Banks was back in his ear, his pin back. And Rico has just caught him defensively and making those kind of plays as well. So, not only is he making massive plays attacking-wise, but, defensively, which if you've talked around his speed before, there's no substitute for it. And yes, it wasn't a decision-making kind of defensive read, but, anytime you can get back and been able to make a big play like that for your team, especially with Australia making inroads massively in that kind of scenario in the game, it kind of just adds to where his game's getting to and how much of a valuable player he is. Considering, Seve Reese is there as well. He's been fantastic with his performances, but Rico's playing well, and I'd hate to be a selector to see who's going to pick their number 11 jersey come Argentina this coming week.
I think that defensive play that you're talking about when he gets back and makes the tackle, and I've got to say, from an entertainer point of view, I love how he does that little hand gesture and he's shaking his head afterwards. It's good theatre from a spectator's point of view. But I think it emphasises the difference in the two teams at the moment. And what I mean by that is, if you watch it, Rico sort of buys time for his teammates to get to him. So he's sizing up Callaway, but almost he's going backwards as he's looking at Callaway, looking at him. And then he sort of does a pump fake to go forward to him, but then goes back. And by that stage, it forces Callaway to pass quite early, and then he gets off and he uses that speed. Not many players could do what he did and get back and make that tackle. But if you watch it, all the black jerseys that are coming and the time he's creating defensively, and selfishly, he doesn't try to take himself out of that play. He reads it, buys time for his teammates, gets back, makes the tackle, big play, and obviously takes him out. The difference is, if we talk about a couple of line breaks that Akita made off the back of Will Jordan. So the Aussie team flew out of in their defensive system to put pressure on Will Jordan, and his sleight of hands, I think, two times got to Akita, it led to tries, and another time it got to Aki, and he made a massive line break and he linked inside with TJ. And I think those defensive frailties and breaking your system and not reading what's needed for the moment are the differences, because those opportunities that where guys flew out and didn't make the tackle or didn't stop the play led to opportunities for the All Blacks to score. And I think the Aussies just need to be able to say, okay, if I'm going to fly here, I've got to hit man and ball and I have to stop this dead. If I don't, we know where we're going to end up and it's probably going to be behind our sticks. Whereas Reeks really read that situation well. I know it's a little bit more drastic, his situation, but I felt it was a good sign of the difference in terms of the defensive structures. And it goes back to the old adage, defense will win you championships.
And I think, I think just on that as well, I think probably the difference, the All Blacks were, operating at 84% tackle success rate, which, isn't great, and what they probably want to work on a few things with how Tate McDermott and especially even the phase play attack with Lolasea going to the line and giving the ball on the insides. I thought they actually posed a lot of questions with the All Blacks, and probably the massive difference around is David Rennie talked about it, Michael Hooper talked about it. It's just they're not clinical enough at the moment. The opportunities that they are getting and they're getting line breaks, they're not making points out of it. Whereas the All Blacks are, you look at David Harvilli's second try, they make a nice line break. Lolasea gives a great inside ball with a flick with a bit of flair. But then off that, if that's the All Blacks, you know, they're scoring first or second phase through the amount of pressure that they do have. Whereas the difference is Corriby picks and goes a little bit, gives the time for the defense to kind of reset, and then Davey gets an intercept and they go for another try, they go for a 14-point try, really. So I think the difference at the moment is that in the attack engine and then with the attack is that the All Blacks are just so clinical and so ruthless when they did get the opportunities. Like, you look at Beauden Barrett's left grubber kick for Will Jordan, drawing pass to Webber. Webber gives it to Geordie Barrett and they score like that. So they're taking the opportunities, where I think the Australians on the weekend posed a lot of questions in the attacking side with a lot of defence. With here, you even look at the defensive percentage of what the All Blacks defended at. But the problem is they're just not getting that. And then probably defensively as well for the All Blacks, their scramble defence is on another level. And the difference between the All Blacks and being able to defend, even when they are, when they do get the line break against them, whereas the Australians, when they are given coughing up the ball, the All Blacks and their click attack are probably a little bit of a difference at the moment.
The All Blacks scramble well too. There was a nice sort of held up there at one stage. There seems to be another line there of defence, whereas the Wallabies appear to be wide open once you're through.
Yeah, look, I think the All Blacks, 84% won't be, positive for them in that sense. But if you watch the start of the game, Tate McDermott was looking to run a lot. And if you watch the forwards in and around the ruck where they've made a lot of gains, the Wallabies, and that's where all of their tries came from in the weekend in the second half, is around that breakdown area and their nines running or Pete Samo picking through the middle. But early on, those men around the ruck, they were set, they were solid, and they adjusted their line speed. If nine ran, they weren't as aggressive with their line speed. If nine gave early, they were really aggressive and pushed the Wallabies back early. And I think defensively, they were outstanding in that first 40. Let's not forget that they had a red card at some stage. They defended with 14, so they've got to protect the front field, the back field with one less. And they managed to, although I do agree that probably the Aussies let them off the hook, doing the crossfield kick rather than going through the hands and then obviously the double movement and the maul. But they still put bodies where they needed to be to prevent points being scored. So I think defensively they'd be really happy with the effort on the weekend. Yep, they were beaten around the heart again, and we all know that you don't want to be beaten around the heart. But McDermott is a classy character, so is Nick White. And we know the impact that Pete Samu can bring off the bench. We've seen him do it for the Crusaders, Tasman, Brumbies, and now he's doing it at international level. But I think those tries show that they're not set-piece tries. They're off the cuff, and that's when they're at the best, is when they're just playing what they're seeing. Samu saw that All Blacks are trying to fold and the others were held up in that scrum, so he picks through the middle. Tate gets held up a little bit at their ruck. He pumps a dummy, beats Brad Weber on the inside, and he's through, and then Nick White runs and runs a cut in and around that breakdown off the back of all the same thing as quick ball, that breakdown quick ball. So I think the Wallabies' attack is there, and they've got the blueprint and the ability to penetrate sides. But one, it goes back to that option taking, but I think more importantly is getting that quick ball more and more often to get defensive sides not having the ability time to set.
Will Dave Rennie be incredibly frustrated, or is he seeing enough improvement in areas on attack and defence to be happy that they're going in the direction he wants them to go, Bryn?
Well, I think if you're talking around attacking, it was a massive improvement on the weekend. Like, whenever the reason why the All Blacks were attacking 84% is because what Jit was saying, the quick ball, the ability that the Australians play off nine, whether it be McDermott, who I thought was outstanding, he had 10 carries, was pretty much had 90 metres and was breaking consistently with the All Blacks, and even Nick White with that little snipe and giving it back with that cut with Tom Banks. So they've got an identity around playing off their nine. So it's continually been able to get that really, really quick ball and play on top of teams to then be able to go through the heart, which they have. Even Karevi in that first 3 minutes, which even got brought back up, because it was a penalty. Going through the heart defense is a good way to try and penetrate the All Blacks at the moment with how they attack. But to play the All Blacks, if you're looking on the weekend with how ruthless they were in the form that they had on attack, you're only going to have a few opportunities in games where you need to be able to score your points. You look at halftime, it was 18-0. It should have been possibly, if Corabetti doesn't double movement that, it's not 18 points. And then, George Bauer gets a steal, kick it into the corner, and then David Harvilli scores that line-out drive. So the ability that they need to have and be rude, especially against the All Blacks, even coming up against the world champion South Africans, when they do have the opportunities, they've got to take them. Because at the moment, the other teams at the moment, and yes, they are playing the All Blacks, who are pretty ruthless in that regard at the moment, they are getting points when they need them, especially at the back end of half time. That's where they're getting their points.
I reckon he will be happy. And the reason why I say that is because I reckon they're in control of all the mistakes. If you know what I mean, like they're in control of breaking their defense system. They're in control of the option taking, you know, the cross field kick when it's on to go hands, the double movements. It's not like it's not like they're losing games on the back of teams just putting them under massive amounts of pressure. A lot of their games are losing them off the back of their own errors. So I know that sounds weird, but he's probably going to be, I suppose not happy with that, but he knows they can control those. And if they control those, they will be in games more often than not.
So you both mentioned the heart defense and also the quick ball through the middle that the Wallabies are getting. It seems to be an area where the All Blacks are falling over and finding a defensive weakness. What can the All Blacks do better in and around the ruck to stop that kind of attack succeeding against them through the Rugby Championship?
Oh, I think I sort of touched on it before because they did it really well in the first half. They adjusted their line speed. So if nine runs, you've got to allow them the time to run. You can't, rush and create holes for them to put forwards away. And then, if he doesn't, he just delivers a pass, you can get off the line and line speed. And I suppose the challenges are coming when it's late in the game and bodies are starting to tire. So I think that's probably the one area they'll look at. And the one way to help it is to get a really good low tackle and get a second arriving player in there to slow the ball down or get a turnover. And if you can't do that, you're always going to be on the back foot. And it will be challenging. So it's those first up tackles and the aggressive nature of what you can provide at that breakdown to buy your teammates time in and around that ruck to set, identify what threats are in front of them, and then make the right decision.
I think there's one thing that they will probably want to address. And look, I think because there were plenty of times in that match where Chip is talking, even that first 10 minutes, they had a real good line set, good chop tackle, and even Anton Leonard-Brown in the first part of that second half got a nice turnover. Early on, Davey Harvilli got a nice turnover, so they are making good decisions. They got six turnovers compared to the Australians' four, so they did a good ability sometimes when they did get it right. They put them under a mound of pressure line speed. Wallabies didn't go anywhere and they'll have turnovers, but what they can control, and they probably will be controlling this moving forward, is the pick through the rucks. Your ruck defenders have to have a really good onus and understanding of, you've got to be able, that's your place to be able to hold that. So even though if it is quick ball, you've got to identify that as a rock or a pillar, the first pillar by that ruck either side to identify if you're going through the ruck. So I can imagine that moving forward, there'll be a lot of solutions around there, and you won't see those pick and goes and such easy ways to get in behind the All Blacks defence walls, because I think the rocks will be able to identify that, and they'll probably put more of an onus on our halfbacks getting in behind and being able to control that and not give such easy outs like Kirivi and Pete Sami did on the weekend.
Hey, let's get to the controversial moment. Jordy Barrett, red card, goes up to take a high ball. His knee's out at first, which is kind of normal, but then suddenly at the last minute, his boot flicks out. It kicks Colin Better in the face, and then suddenly he's red carded. So, one word answer to start from both of you. Jipper, you first. Should that have been a red card?
Yeah.
One word.
I don't think you can do it in one week. I'm not going to be pushed into that because it's a hard one, because if you use Nambora from a few years ago, the Highlanders, his eyes are looking at the defender coming at him and then he extends the boot, whereas Geordie's eyes are on the ball the whole time and it naturally extends. And I don't think there was intent. And it was I feel it was accidental, and people probably will say, oh yeah, you're a Kiwi, but even Tim Horan, who's an Aussie great, said there's no way that's a red card because it was accidental. Because you could almost go to the point, and a lot of people said this, is the boot to Michael Hooper's face is accidental, but it's still, he got removed from the field. Is that going to become a red card? So I'm not saying it's like for like, but I feel like there's a lot more mitigating circumstances for Jordy when he's going to the judiciary, whereas Tevita Namboro, when he went, It was he almost sighted the guy and extended his leg towards him, whereas I feel like he's looking at the ball the whole time. So there's a genuine, accidental nature to this injury.
Hmm.
So that's a no?
Well, I think a precedent will be set now because we haven't really seen an accidental one of these. Previously, well, I haven't anyway. Previously, all we've seen is that one in Super Rugby, is what one I was talking about, where he sighted the Waratahs winger coming towards him, then extended it. This time, it's extended with him without him knowing where the defender is. And it's no different to someone in Corumbetti's position that has to wait and let the guy land before he hits him. He's got a responsibility. Mm. It might now, post this situation, the guy catching it has a responsibility not to extend his foot. And if he does, then it will, the precedent will be set that it is a red card. So I think we're in a grey area zone at the moment because there isn't a precedent.
I think thankfully, that 20-minute red card was in play because, I agree that, you can go either both way, whether it's a red card or not. I thought it looked accidental. Geordie wasn't doing it on purpose, but we talk about player safety and being able, it was straight to the head. And so you can warrant the reason for it to be possibly a red card, but, especially early in that game, it happened in the 28th minute. If we go back to this, the Lions series when Sonny Bill got sent off very early in the game, it takes away how you can play a game, especially with Geordie being at 15, who's, you talk about the role, the double pivot, the pendulum, being able to only have one in the back. Like, Will Jordan actually ended up being in the backfield quite a lot due to Geordie being red carded. But thankfully, that 20 minutes was there because then you could be able to, for a spectator, right or wrong, whether you're Australian or New Zealand supporter, the 20 minutes didn't actually, wasn't that much of a hindrance. Yes, the All Blacks had to be able to go through the solution process, and they did really, really well, especially even with Artie Savia going off and Cody Taylor going off through that period, and they held their nerve and be able to get 7 points during that 20-minute kind of spell. But I think the fact that it was only 20 minutes, the All Blacks did enough to be able to hold on and actually did what they needed to through that period of time. But as a consumer, as a fan, you get still the spectacle aspect, which you probably didn't for that Lions series with the example of Sonny Bill being sent off.
Yeah, yeah. Here's where I have trouble with it. And that's the idea that, a sprig can go into someone's eye and they can end up losing sight out of one eye, which could have quite easily happened. It was not far from his eye. And with that being the case, does intention matter?
Well, that's what I mean. I think we're in a place where there's going to be a precedent set because it's no different to when a guy got taken out mid-air and he could land on his neck. Mm. And now there's a clear precedent and there's a clear way that we're expected as players to look after the guy in the air that's attacking the ball. Do you know what I mean when I'm saying that?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm saying. I think this is a turning point that this will be very clear going forward, that you can't extend it. And if you do extend it, accidental or not, you will face repercussion.
The laws at the moment, and in fact, all of the rulings at the moment seem to be heading in that direction. I feel like the precedent has already been set in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but not of this exact nature. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you need the incident to happen to know how it's going to be dealt with. And look, the red card happened. So he dealt with it within the laws of this current. But he might not get the 6 weeks that Tevita Namboro got when he cited him. Do you know what I mean? So when he goes to the citing commissioner, he's not getting 6 weeks because there's mitigating circumstances, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
The other thing is now, if it's a well-placed high ball, who is the attacking player? If you know what I mean, it's quite difficult. Is the attacking player the first person who's closest to the ball in the first instance?
Yeah, I think it's the one that attacks it in the air and gets, obviously the height advantage. So if you don't have the height advantage, doesn't matter if you're looking at it or not, and you're going to clip his legs, you better bail out and get out of there because we know.
Yeah, and it's usually it's usually the guy receiving it because, obviously they're not coming from such a far away. They're already set back. And they've already got they're usually in a better position to be able to get up for the ball. So it's the guy that's coming, that's going to go from the ball, that's the attacking team that's kicking it. They've got to be really aware and understand, if I'm too late, then I've got to bail out because I'm just not going to get up for the ball. But if it's a contestable kick where it's like 19, 20 metres, then, you're probably going to go like that, where it's going to be a little bit easier.
Considering the punishment's already been there for the red card, should this now be a case of there being no punishment further?
I think it'll be interesting to see how they deal with it, because I think it's totally different to Naburu's case in Super Rugby.
And that had a profound effect. We didn't see him for a couple of years. He went completely off the radar.
Well, that's the reason. That's the reason why Chip is saying it's such a great area, because it hasn't happened a lot, you know. So with the difference between the examples that we've used, that if you talk about the red card and the laws, the kind of jumping the ball in the air and the player's safety around that, if he doesn't swing onto his neck and break, like, you know, the possibility of him breaking his neck would be the worst case scenario. So those kind of instances happen quite a lot where that's quite common in the games. But whereas, you know, Naburu was probably the only example, and the only other time I could think about was actually in league when Billy Slater actually did it with his technique that he had. So I think it's a grey area, and like, it's a very unique situation that we have. You know, it's very uncommon that we'll see this happen again, but there has to be precedence moving forward around what that might look like. And, you know, hopefully for a Kiwi sake, and you look at what Tim Horan said around it, you know, possibly that shouldn't be a red card.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You'd like to think that the fact that Geordie did get red carded in that circumstances, and it was for 20 minutes, that will go into the judiciary system around him not getting such a big ban on the border.
And I think the one positive out of it, sorry Ross, is that, you know, Conan Betty didn't get injured, and it's obviously brought up a relevant area that is grey now, but I think coming out the back of the judicial hearing, there will be no grey area moving forward, which can only be good for the game.
And the referees, because it's unfair on the referee in a lot of ways to have a grey area when he's making such a big call in such an important time of a test match.
Yeah, well, it's always a tough job refereeing at the best of times. Something like this that can give clear parameters, I suppose, for them to make easier decisions on the go. I think it'll obviously lessen the pressure on them in big test matches.
It's that time of the week again. Let's talk Beauden Barrett versus Richie Mwanga. let's do it all over again. We need a sting, a piece of music that we run with this, and some graphics and animation and the like. It's for the weekly segment. Beauden Barrett,
Akira, Rico, Bodie. Anybody else? Do we want to go anyone else? No, sorry. We'll go Bodie. We'll go Bodie. You played well on the weekend. Sorry. Chipper, go, mate. It's your time, mate.
Hey, mate, I'm very complimentary of everyone when it's deserved.
Well, I want to know, you know, what you made of his efforts, really. A good, very broad question, because he seemed like he was on the money.
Yeah, look, I think if you look at it statistically from a game point of view, you see, you know, 38% territory and 40% possession, and it's easy to think, oh, man, they did well with those sorts of stats, but I think that's a reflection on the game drivers, and Bodie's a big part of that. Their balance of attack, their kick strategy, and their choice of kicks, and their execution of it. And by that I mean, you know, a lot of their tries came from deep, and it's easy enough in those situations to go, oh, look, we'll get it down there, play the, you know, field position, but they chance their arm and tried to make some penetration with the pitches they saw. And then obviously, if they were feeling that line speed pressure, you know, it's not just Bodie, it's the guys in and around him calling those calls, but that little grubber in behind, but there were a number of other kicks that were really effective for their game plan and strategy. And that's what I think he controlled really well. And he just orchestrated their game plan in all parts of the field where I suppose, I mean, that's why he's played 93 tests, it isn't always as easy as you think. If you use it on the flip side for Lolosio, when you know, they have a man up and they're going for a crossfield kick when it's not quite on, that's where their balance of attack and their option taking wasn't quite as sound, and that was probably the difference. And that's why I think Bodie would be really happy with the performance of himself, but more importantly, the performance of the men in front of him. And you know, I think the smarts, and I know it's a group thing, but I always think the 10 will be driving how they play. To go to them, you know, they're 30 out, they're a man down. It's a smart play to go to the mall to score a try off it is amazing. Even Dave Harvilli scores off it, because that's where they're down in numbers, is out in the back. So they go to the mall and they muscle up, and you know, Davey joins in. Selfless play from Tokiaho to pass it back to Blackadder. Blackadder gives it to Harvilli. They eventually get the try. But it's those sorts of things that aren't the highlight reel, but that's the control and the decision-making and under pressure delivering for his team to get the result that we saw yesterday that I think he'll be most happy with.
Other impressive people more in your area, Bryn. TJ Pettinato looked very sharp in his return.
Yeah, he did. I think, you know, he came on for the 54th minute, and you know, he's done it time and time again in his career, being able to be that impact around, have a real good understanding of kind of moments in games. And you know, you look at that, the try that he did set up. You know, the Australians made a great great attack from that, and we're going through the line. It was off a line break, and then you know, TJ has a really good ability to be able to, whether that be an intercept or make a big moment in a game, and got that intercept, did some great footwork, and then put some a great crossfield kick in for Georgie Bridge to score that try. And really, that was the nailing of the game. Probably actually the David Harvilli try before that was the nailing of the game, but kind of just put it a little bit more. But yeah, I think the more time that he's going to get, you know, this guy's played, you know, 70 odd test matches, so you know, it's not going to take him long. Very similar to Brodie Retallick, you know, and Bodie as well. It doesn't take guys that long to be able to get back to where they need to be, even if they've been in a different competition and been in Japan. But look, I think he'll be stoked with his game. And, you know, I thought Brad Weber was outstanding on the weekend as well. You know, I thought he really set the platform really well. If you're talking around Aaron Smith's speed of ball to get to the ball, Brad did that really, really well. And then, you know, had some great touches, being able to play interplaying with a draw and pass set up for the first try with Jordy Barrett. And did some good box kicks and did some actually great scramble D as well. So, look, I think both of them had great games in respect to what they needed. You know, we talked around first around what Aaron Smith gives you starting a game, and look, I thought Brad has be able to do that, especially the tempo that the All Blacks play and gets in and around the ball, whether it be second touches off line breaks. He's really good at that. And defensively, I thought he put his body on the line and showed some really good hits as well and some great scramble D. And then TJ comes on and does what he does around the stuff that I've explained. So it'll be interesting to see where they do go, because one guy is going to get another opportunity to play. So both guys had good matches, especially with what was needed. Brad started and did what you needed of him, and then the game opened up around TJ and bringing Albert Bear, have his ability to have instinct of rugby, which he does really, really well.
And one of the key things, Bryn, I think, out of that, what you just said there, is his defensive organisation in that red card period. Mm-hmm. When they're down to 14, you're 9, so crucial in and around that ruck. Yep. To be directing forwards, or potentially for him slipping into that D line to fill a hole where a forward might not be, or covering the chip space. And there's a lot going on. They're having to communicate a lot. And to not have any points scored against them in that period, it is a team-wide effort, the 14 men on the field. But there are some key people, your fullback and your 9 and your defensive system that play a key role. And sometimes that stuff goes unnoticed because you don't really know defensive systems as a viewer. But he was massive in that period of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another person who looked pretty sharp, David Harvilli, taking line-out ball too. That take-off, that long line-out was incredible. But what about that midfield combo? Have we settled here? Is this combo for the future?
Oh, look, I think Davey's been probably in great form, considering that, you know, you look at last year, he was a fullback, and it's his first year really getting into the number 12 jersey since he was younger with the Crusaders, time at the Crusaders, and then been able to play back-to-back tests in the last couple of games. But now, look, I think, you know, Davey's been in a rich reign of form, and it's just the little things as well. He topped the tackle count with 12 tackles, and a lot of those tackles were against a guy like Sevi Kirivi, who, you know, had 21 ball carries and didn't really... you know, get a lot of pick and go through the middle, you know, played well, but I think it was a really good test for Davey for what's to come. We've talked around the South African midfielders and, you know, with Delende and Am, who are in such great form. A test like that with Kerevi, who's a great ball runner and real physical. I think it came in a good time for Dave. And then I think the intercept try is something that Dave does a lot of time with his time being at fullback back at the Crusaders and anticipating where the ball was going to be. I've seen him do that plenty of times. He did it actually in Super Rugby against the Brumbies. He got an intercept in similar circumstances and has a real good knack in that defensive system. We're talking around a pendulum and understanding where the ball is going to be and your positioning and the line speed. I think that's where he's made massive gains. And with Anton Leonard-Brown as well, I think they're complementing each other really, really well. And, you know, Davey's doing some really good things and Anton's been able to complement that as well. But, you know, I think Davey's in a really good place and I think it's going to be a good test for him coming. We've got the Argentinians, but if he does continue to keep playing, that combination going forward against the South Africans will be a really enticing battle.
Yeah, I think you're right around Davey around those intercepts. I reckon he really picks his targets. He always seems to pick on forwards, you know, because forwards hear that they've got to get that ball to that edge. You know, they know the space is there, and it's almost like Matt Phillips just caught and gave it. You know, he didn't really, size up what sort of threats were out there in terms of the All Blacks. And it's almost like he senses that, I suppose, that type five skill set isn't like a inside back or an outside back and you know, is so smart to read that situation on the run, to know that it's a high percentage play, that intercept. That's not a low percentage guess play. It's a real high percentage play. And I think that epitomizes the way he's playing at the moment. Everything he does is at a high percentage success rate. And he doesn't leave anything to chance during the week, you know, and I don't think he leaves anything to chance when he's out there on game day either. He really dots his I's and crosses his T's in everything he does.
Bryn, one of the terms that you use regularly is pendulum. For people who watch the show and don't necessarily fully understand what the concept of the pendulum is on defence and how it works, could you maybe break that down a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So, like, the pendulum is the backfield, so the backfield cover. So, if we use the All Black as an example, they usually have a 10 and a 15 in the backfield, kind of moving like a pendulum. So, if the ball is going either side, they're working, like, collectively together to be able to cover the backfield. And so, that's what we talk about with the pendulum with 10 and 15. But the other people that are involved in that is your 9, like Jipper said. So, if you go down to what we did on the weekend, we lost a player with number 15 with Geordie. So then Will ended up being in the backfield, and then obviously the 9 might drop back a little bit because there's not two guys in the backfield cover. So the 9 and the fullback will be working together collectively. And so, but then if you go defensively as well, what that does is if you've got the two guys in the backfield, our wingers, 11 and 14, are playing really high. And so if you look in the previous two test matches with Sebi Reese being able to get the intercepts, it's because they're high, knowing that the two people in the backfield are there to cover them, telling them to where to go. So for it to work really, really well, you've got to be able to communicate really well. So your 10 and 15 in the back are given the confidence for the wingers to be able to stay high and go for those intercepts and stay high and bring line speed pressure. And until what that does going inside, it gives Davey and Anton Leonard-Brown, or if it's a loose forward on the edge defending there, giving them confidence to go up. So really good teams have a really good understanding of communication skills with those two guys in the back. And 9 has a really good understanding of what his role is around the heart defense. And probably one thing they will want to marry up and not with those pick and goes through the middle, they'll want to rectify those things. But that's kind of the idea of what the pendulum does. And so the All Blacks at this stage are making some really good gains from having that kind of pendulum system at the moment. Jibber, did I miss anything on that?
You nailed it, mate. You nailed it.
There'll be a test later.
Yeah.
The pendulum doesn't want to see Samu Karevi busting out of a ruck after a couple of minutes with Corin Betta near him. Let's talk a little bit about Samu. Like, obviously, he's a guy who's based overseas, but do the Wallabies need to make the most effort they can to make sure that this guy remains in their mix for the long term?
Well, he's a busy player, isn't he? He likes to be involved. And with that comes defensive attention. And so it doesn't always mean Samu's going to come out the other side of a defensive line, but what it does mean is it can create opportunity for others because of that defensive attention on him. There must be space somewhere else. So I think he's a key cog in that sense in terms of their attack play, but also I think he's a key cog in helping out the young man Noah Lolisio inside him really develop his game and his ability to take the right option more often than not, because we know he's got the skill set. We saw some lovely touches again by Noah, really injecting himself with that inside ball. And when he's playing, you know, flat and fast, and it's sort of on a platter for him, he's great. It's having guys like Samu outside him that can sort of relieve a bit of the pressure if it's not going to plan. You know he can get a gain line carry. That is key. And I know Paisami's, you know, outstanding, but I think he's not quite at that Samu Karevi stage just yet. And I think someone like Samu Karevi could be great for Hunter as well. And Ikitau and all those guys coming through to create a long line of strong midfielders for years to come for the Wallabies.
Yeah, I think the difference with Hunter at the moment is, like, we've seen his form in Super Rugby. He's a young fella, and even Ikitau as well. They're going to be able to have, the more time that they do have, the better they're going to get. But it's those things where, if I look at Hunter in probably the first couple of test matches, they were just, you know, there were mistakes that kind of just that cost them. And so whether it be a little offload, trying a little bit too much, or if it's an intercept, little things like that, especially against the All Blacks, you can't really afford to be able to do that. So through time, play more time, he's going to be great moving forward. But I think with having a guy like Karevi, who, you look, he had 21 carries on the weekend, had a great pick through the middle, which was heads up rugby that ended up being a penalty, but he's really decisive and hit in his game, and there's not that many mistakes around him. So when you're not putting your team consistently under pressure through mistakes, Samu does that, and so he's going to be able to give a lot more intel. You talk around Quade Cooper, and we talk about the influence that he would have on Noah. Having a guy like Karevi, who's played a lot of test matches and has a really good understanding of what his way of how he plays, it's only going to help the likes of Ikitau and Paisami moving forward, having him in the squad and him playing.
Before we move on quickly to looking at next week, Tate McDermott, who of course was a standout player, labelled his team as soft post-match. Is that fair, Jipper?
Look, I've been guilty of this as well. I'll make no bones, you know. When you're on the back of a hard loss, emotions are running high, and you want something so desperately, you say things that... you know, aren't necessarily correct, because I don't think they're soft. I think, as I said before, I think there'll be parts of Dave Rennie, you know, that he'll be really confident with where they're heading, because they're in control of their own sort of destiny. But I think it just shows why he's so good, because of the standards he sets on himself and his teammates around him. But I think they've got to find a way, I suppose, to take the positives out of it, to be able to get back on the horse, because they're not coming up against anything lesser this coming week. And, you know, having any questions of each other isn't going to help those sorts of preparations. So I don't think he necessarily meant it. I think he was just really frustrated with the result. But I think it sort of shows you why he's so good, because you can see the sort of standards he'd be driving himself.
Yeah, typical halfback.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, like, if you're talking around performances on the weekend, look, he's continued to be a standout for that side, isn't he? Like, his ability to be able to pose questions around that heart defense, and even just instinctive things happening around Tate. You know, there are a couple of times it was just off the cuff, and every time he has the ball, he's just got that explosiveness, especially for not a big man, but, you know, he's deceptively strong and is deceptively fast as well. So, look, I think the more that they can marry up their attack phase around Tate, because at the moment he's really imposing a lot of questions, and it's going to be great to see him moving forward against different oppositions. Look at the South Africans on the weekend, who defensively are really good. So it's going to be interesting to see his growth around, if they can keep imposing himself around that hard defence, because I think the South Africans are going to be a different kettle of fish for them. And I think more so in the fact that, yes, the All Blacks are a good defensive side and put them under pressure, but I think if you're talking around defensive units in the world at the moment, especially the South Africans, who went up against a physical outfit of the British and Irish Lions and even the Argentinians the week before, they're in a really good place. So I think, you know, if you're in a South African team looking at that, you're going to be obviously wanting to marry up that hard defense, put them under a lot of pressure, and take away his running game, because at the moment he's easily the best running line in the competition for sure.
Yeah, he's sharp. He's really sharp. Can he be a difference and help the Wallabies beat the Springboks? Can that happen this weekend, Jipper?
Oh, look, I think they have to believe, and I think he is a big factor of been the difference. We've seen he's a hell of a threat, and I think Bryn, and I sort of touched on it before, is when he's off the cuff and he's playing what's in front of him is when he's at his best, and that's when he makes his most damaging, I suppose, inroads. But what I did like to see on the weekend is, they had a couple of licks in between the 240s, and when they didn't quite get the gains they wanted, they went to the kick, and I thought he kicked really well. And he was patient and composed in a round, like he didn't rush that. He got it to a point where, one, he kept his chase line in the fight, gave them the ability to contest those contestables, and two, it sort of brought a balance to their attack that potentially we hadn't seen before, and very similar to what we've seen from South Africa. So another string to his bow, and I think he'll be a big factor this weekend.
I think that's going to be massive, I think, for the Australians this week, Jip, because I think, both, if we've been honest, the All Blacks and the Australians, they wanted to play rugby. The conditions were outstanding in Perth, and it seemed like it was hot over there, but, both teams wanted to play. They're 27 kicks from the All Blacks, 18 from the Wallabies, but that's going to go up a lot for the Springboks, so I think that no man's zone, Jip, is going to be really important for the Australians moving forward, because they will want to have a look, they will want to have a play, but just with how the South Africans are defensively, they will have times where they will slow down their ball, they will have a great line set, then they're going to have to go into those kind of decision-making skills what they did on the weekend with Tate McDermott putting up the box kicks. Whether you want to have also not Lolasea being able to put the contestables off 10, I think that's going to have to massive growth for them moving forward, because look, they do want to play and they will play, but their decision-making skills around when they have to shut up shot. I think as Dave Rennie actually brought up a really good point. If you get to that 3 to 4 phases and you're not going anywhere, you've got to have the ability then to be able to, how can you build pressure through contestable games like Tate McDermott did on the weekend? Because come this weekend, when they do play the Springboks, they're going to have a lot more decision-making. Yeah, going to have to make much more decisions around that when they do kick, if they don't want to run as well.
Yeah, and I think another key factor is what we're talking about is on the flip side, is we know the Springboks are going to kick a hell of a lot. So their back three is crucial this week. And the work of their players, their forwards, escorting to create little pockets, as we spoke about for the Lions. And we know that the teams that have been successful at the moment, international level, is the ones that have, primarily nailing their defence. And defence will win games. The least amount of opportunities you give trying to play out of your half or trying to play out of your red zone, the better, I think, because if you do give the Springboks that sniff, they are good enough to take it and turn that into points. So it will be a real arm wrestle and something that they'll have to do for 80 minutes and have the discipline to stick to that for 80 minutes. And those sorts of key facets will be crucial for the whole game. You just won't be able to switch off if they want to be in the fight.
So just a quick one each from you. Do you pick Wallabies or do you pick Springboks?
I'm going Springboks.
Yeah, look, I think you have to go Springboks. I just think defensively they're so strong and they've just got a game plan that they just believe in. But they've also got the ability to go between game plans as well. So I just think they're in a really good space, high on confidence, and will be keen to get over here and make a statement and use in, a couple of weeks. Let's make no bones about it. They'll be targeting the All Blacks, but they're also such a smart team, well-led team, well-coached team, that they'll want to send a message with these next two performances.
I think there's two things that probably the South Africans have done really, really well, and the Australians will probably have to really be on for, is you talk around the set piece. The last time when they played the Argentinians, they went to the line out more and really took their legs out through that way. So I think, and even in the British-Irish Lions series as well, set piece-wise, they had big scrum penalties and big moments in games. So their set piece parity is going to be massive for the South Africans, and they'll be wanting to impose their will on that department. And so you look at the Australians on the weekend, had a better scrum percentage and it had better line-out percentage as well, even though that wasn't top-quality ball at all times. But I think the parity around their set piece is going to be massive, because I think they had massive, if you're talking around when you play the All Blacks, the breakdown is massive because they play quick ball, got great skill set and execution under pressure. But I think they still have to have that mindset, but at the same time, getting those improvements in the set piece for the South Africans will definitely put them under pressure this coming weekend.
I think they have to make a decision there. I mentioned a few weeks ago about Kieran Reid in that round robin game against the Springboks in the World Cup, and they didn't compete in the air. They just sacked, and they took that away from them. I think if the Wallabies, you know, really focus on just, okay, we're not going to compete. We know they're going to more with, you know, let's take something that's a strength of theirs away from them and make them do something that they don't want to do. That those sorts of little mind games and little small wins can play a big factor on, one, your own confidence, but actually denting them to having to go to plan B or C.
Argentina. Oh, yeah, we've just got a couple of minutes to go. Argentina, are they in a place like they were last year to beat the All Blacks, or is this another All Blacks win over Argentina, Bryn?
Oh, look, I don't think you ever underestimate an Argentinian team or any time, even any team in kind of the top tier nations. And I think, look, probably asked a similar question last year when we were playing the Argentinians, who didn't have a lot of preparation time and beat the All Blacks, you know. So I don't think there's the All Blacks won't be resting on their laurels and being anything around being complacent, because look, they're on a road to be able to obviously play the Springboks, and obviously they're not going to talk about it because they're a week to week preparation team and seeing what's in front of them. But look, they'll be want to improve in their performance in areas. You know, we talked around the heart defense. You know, they'll want to sew that up a little bit better, and there'll be improvements in their game that they always want to continue to keep getting better. But look, I think they are in they would be the favourites moving into this game against the Argentinians. But look, the Argentinians have enough there and enough prowess and enough passion, especially when they do play the All Blacks. They lift a different level. So I'm still backing the All Blacks, though they should win comfortably. But look, you never underestimate the Argentinians at all.
Yeah, look, I think if Argy are going to win this one, they've got to do what they did last year and bring that, you know, real defensive presence and be brutal and dominant in that area. And then when they're attacking, they've got to bring their flair. Man, they look so good when they're getting their offload game, playing that off the cuff, attacking chip and chases on the edge, all that sort of toes ahead, things that aren't planned or trained during the week, they just happen out in the game. That's when they're at their best. And I think if both sides of the ball, they can bring that intensity defensively, and then that, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but it's just razzle, I suppose. It's something you can't sort of put into words, but they are really good at executing it. And they did that really well in that 75th to 85th minute against the Springboks, and they need to take the juices they got out of that and bring that in droves coming up against the All Blacks. But I think we'll see a bit of change and a little bit of change in style in the All Blacks, and I think they'll be backing themselves to get the job done.
Plenty of football to look forward to this weekend, the Rugby Championship in full swing. Once again, thank you for joining us on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Thanks to Bryn Hall. Thanks to James Parsons. We'll see you again next week. Ka kite anō.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.